It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. So-called free-range parenting has become a lightning rod topic, particularly since a couple in Maryland were investigated for neglect for allowing their children, ages 10 and 6, to play independently in a neighborhood park. This hour, we'll talk about parenting. How much freedom is enough freedom? How much freedom is too much? And one thing that's really striking is how similar this free-range parenting approach is to what was really the status quo in America prior to the late 1980s. There has been a major cultural shift, and a lot of it seems to have to do with fear. Fear of what might happen to our children if they go out alone. Barry Glassner, my first guest today, is an expert on fear. He's the president of Lewis and Clark College and author of The Culture of Fear, Why Americans Are Afraid of the Wrong Things, Crime, Drugs, Minorities, Teen Moms, Killer Kids, Mutant Microbes, Plane Crashes, Road Rage, and so much more. Barry, thank you for being here today.
Thanks for inviting me.
I want to talk about this cultural shift. In your research, when did you see this really taking place?
It's hard to identify exactly, but it is probably mostly sometime in the 80s is when it really kicked in. And then it's continued since then. And I think it has a lot to do with changes in the media environment, changes in politics, the rise of very effective advocacy groups, you know, who raise money off of these kinds of fears. But, you know, above all, if I had to name really one leading culprit, it's cable TV news, you know, where if it bleeds, it leads, has always been the story in local TV news. But now, you know, these stories, and especially this was true actually in the earlier days of cable TV news, where, you know, any time a child was missing, for example, you'd hear about it forever. And, you know, they would tease the story all day, and then there were just wall-to-wall coverage of it.
So I can remember some very, very high-profile cases where kids were abducted. And again, you know, there was all of that media coverage. Did that coverage represent any kind of actual change in level of danger in our culture?
From everything I've been able to see and lots of other researchers, the answer is basically no. And what's important to understand is that even though there have been literally tens of thousands of stories about missing children on TV during pretty much any of these periods that you can talk about, any couple-year period that you can talk about, And you know, let me be clear, I would never minimize the horror or the seriousness of a child abduction. That's not the issue. It's how afraid parents should be in putting this into perspective. And the reality is, depending on which year you look at, you know, it's always around 100 children a year who are victims of what the official U.S. government statistics, you know, the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention, what they call stereotypical kidnappings. And that's the type that you know, makes the news, where the child is abducted by a stranger and kept for some period of time, or in really tragic cases, never found again. But if you look at the coverage, as I did, and if you look at the hype from some of the advocacy groups, you would never have this. No, you would never understand that it's so few children. You know, you hear numbers bantered around, you know, which I documented in the book from very prominent sources, of 100,000 abductions of children by strangers every year in the United States. You know, and again, it's not 100,000, it's somewhere around 100. And just to put this in perspective, and this is what I think really matters for parents to keep in mind, a child is more likely to be seriously injured or die from falling off a bicycle or from being struck by lightning. And so to raise our children in this kind of environment of being suspicious of everybody around them and giving them no chance to be children or to play in any kind of reasonable way is just a horrible disservice to the children. and a real misunderstanding of the danger that's out there.
Well, I think a lot of people would take issue with not giving kids an opportunity to play. I mean, we, as parents, a lot of us work really hard to make sure that our kids get opportunities to play. And there have been all those statistics recently about how many hours a day parents today engage with their children or are supervising their children. And those hours have gone up. So, I mean, it's also part of how we've changed how we parent. But one thing that really interests me, I mean, people are always nostalgic for their own childhoods, and you see it in the stores. You see the recycling of toys from the 1980s, for example, now that parents, you know, people who are parents grew up in the 1980s, they want their kids to have the same things that they did. And when you talk to people, they are nostalgic about the kind of freedom they had in the 1970s and the 1980s. But there does seem to be something that prevents people from giving their kids that kind of freedom.
Well, I think that they've been made afraid of so many different things from so many different groups, you know, from a lot of these advocacy groups that raise money this way, as I say, from some, you know, especially from the cable TV news media and some of the local TV news, and, you know, and from political campaigns and people selling various products. And so, yeah, I think a fair number of parents are simply afraid of letting their children engage in what, you know, this, I like this phrase, free-range parenting. I just think, yeah, while parents are nostalgic and wonderfully involved, that's a good thing, and wasn't always the case in the past, by the way. You know, we're talking about the downside of current parenting, but that was a downside of some earlier parenting where, you know, it was less common that the children would have that kind of access to their parents and connection with their parents. That part's good, but restricting the children from being off on their own and trusting the world that they're in is not a great thing.
Do you feel like it goes beyond this arena of parenting, beyond just not wanting our kids to be by themselves?
Well, sure. I mean, we see this kind of connection that continues when parents drop their children off at college. You know, another expression that I think is a pretty descriptive one is helicopter parents that you may have heard. So even by the time young people are old enough to go to college and they enter college, there are more than a few parents who stay very, very involved in ways that don't let their children go off and be independent and do the kinds of things they need to do on their own, which, by the way, by that age includes mistakes, right? You might not want your 3-year-old or 6-year-old to make a serious mistake that they're not old enough to seriously consider. But by the time your child certainly is late high school and early college, they better be able to go off and you know, as the current parents' generation used to put it, do their thing. A lot more than they're often encouraged to do by their parents, and to explore things. You know, part of this, it's not just about restrictions. It's about encouragement. One thing that we find at every range, at pretty much every age, is a lack of encouragement of exploration beyond those areas that the parents are encouraging themselves. In other words, to encourage exploration on their children's part. And I mean, you know, you see that in playgrounds, right? When the child wants to go off and explore something new that scares the parent, or with a group of other children that the parent doesn't want them with, and then it carries all the way through to what the child should major in college, rather than taking advantage of exploring a whole lot of different options. So, you know, I do think that there are many, many ways in which this current generation of parents do a great job, and potentially a better job than previous generations. But this part, where fear really rules, I think is an unfortunate downside.
One of the things that I think is really interesting about how afraid we seem to be to let our children go off on their own is that we have this incredible safety device now that generations before didn't have. And that's the cell phone. I tell you what, when I was a kid, I would have given anything to have the ability to call my parents in a few situations that I remember. Why hasn't that, in your opinion, made us a little more free? Because we can touch base pretty much whenever.
Well, that's something I like to talk about, too. So let me just say I completely agree with you. You know, the kind of concern should be mitigated, right? We should worry less about this because our children can contact us. The flip side of that, though, right, is that they can contact us, and if we haven't heard from them, oh, my goodness, what does that mean? You see what I mean?
Right.
So instead of being assured all the time or feeling more confident, some parents, at least, worry even more if they don't hear from their children. And even worse, there are those who call their children, maybe incessantly is too strong a word, but pretty often, rather than, again, giving them the chance to be as independent as is advisable or appropriate for their age, which, you know, is different at age 6 or 8 or 10 than it is at 17 or 18 or 23. But it's important, to take advantage of this technology in a positive way.
There has been this cultural shift. I know it was an evolution, you know, starting with, okay, we don't let our kids just be at home after school by themselves and, you know, changes that have taken place over a couple of decades. Do you think it's gone about as far as it can go?
I always hate to predict that because every time I think that's true, I'm surprised. So to go back to something we were discussing before, because it's a good example of this, after the horrific events of 9/11 and 2001, I thought, okay, all these fears and scares that I've been studying that are blown way out of proportion will now disappear. And they did for a few months. But then they all came back. We were talking again about abducted kids and huge scares about that, shark attacks and all this kind of stuff. So, unfortunately, I never cease to be amazed at how we can come up with new levels of fear and fear-mongering in this country.
Barry, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you.
Barry Glassner is the author of The Culture of Fear, Why Americans Are Afraid of the Wrong Things. We'll continue our conversation about free-range parenting in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we are talking about what has been dubbed free-range parenting. And no matter what your overall philosophy is as a parent, parenting involves dozens of decisions or judgment calls every single day. Iowa Public Radio producer Emily Woodbury talked to two Iowa City moms as they were waiting to pick their kids up from school about how they struggle with deciding how much freedom to give their young children.
Can I get your name and where you're from?
Mm-hmm. Christine Elliott from Coralville, Iowa.
And how old is your child or children that you're picking up today?
My child is 8.
Rebecca Hansen from Iowa City. I have a 7-year-old daughter.
What do you allow them to do as far as going out on their own right now?
She is allowed to go in our neighborhood across the street, maybe up a few houses, but I do like to keep an eye on her. I like to be able to see her from wherever I'm sitting.
I'm a little bit of an overbearing parent, I think. I just recently started letting her walk to school on her own, just a few blocks. She only has one street to cross on her own, but she's pretty good about it. That's about the extent of it, I think, at this point.
How do you determine what you allow her to do as far as going out on her own? Do you think there are certain ages where certain things are appropriate, like going to the park with friends to play alone for an hour, for instance? Or
it's a good question. We talk about that a lot in our neighborhood because we have some kids that just show up with no parents, and it's hard to know. My daughter, she's only 8. I wouldn't let her go to a park by herself, plus there's nothing by her house anyway. But I still feel like at 8, I feel like she's a little too young to be off by herself. She's very mature and responsible, but I still feel like, if someone came up and said, I lost my puppy, she would be the first one to go, not even thinking that something could happen. So she's still learning.
I think I just kind of take it one day at a time. She does have some friends that live really close by, just kind of walking through the backyard. So there have been times where I've let her go over to their house. But I know the moms and they let me know when she's over there. So, yeah, I think just take it one day at a time and see how things go.
Do you see a difference in the way you were raised or, you know, your classmates at your, you know, when you were a child were raised versus how kids are being raised now?
Yes. When I was a kid, you could go off all day by yourself. But it's a different time now. People, you know, maybe we just know more than we did when I was a kid. But we, yeah, yes, of course. When I was a kid, you went out when the sun came up and you came home when the sun went down and nobody checked, but you were fine. But it's just, I don't know, we just know more things now than we used to.
And when you say know more about what?
I don't know, just the awful things that can happen to kids with the way you get your news nowadays. It's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You hear about all these awful things, you read things online all the time, and it does sort of make you a little more leery about just letting your kids out by themselves all the time. I don't know, it's hard.
There's no one-size-fits-all approach when it comes to parenting on this issue or any other, but this hour we're going to talk about some of the big questions that today's parents deal with. How much freedom is enough? How much freedom is too much? What are the real dangers? And of course, we'd love to hear from you as well, your thoughts, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And with me now is Kim Grader. She's Associate Professor in Family Life Extension and Outreach State Program Specialist at Iowa State University. She also contributes to the Science of Parenting blog. Hello, Kim.
Hello there.
Thank you so much for being here today.
I am happy to be here.
And Wendy Rickman is also here. She is Division Administrator of Adult Children and Family Services for the Iowa Department of Human Services. Hello, Wendy.
Good morning.
Now, I mentioned earlier in the hour the case in Maryland. Two parents were investigated for neglect for allowing their children, a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old, to play independently at a local park, to walk to and from a park that was about a mile away from their home. And there were a lot of questions in that case about what the laws were in Maryland. I know that a lot of parents in Iowa suddenly thought, oh, hey, what are the laws here in Iowa about this? So, Wendy, can you help us out? Are there laws about when a child needs to be supervised or a certain age limit?
Sure. In Iowa, the expectation, Iowans believe that parents have the right and the responsibility to raise their kids. So when we talk about child abuse or neglect, there is no set age in Iowa for a child to be left alone or unsupervised. The idea is that we want parents to raise kids who are healthy and strong and have the ability to make good decisions. So when we talk about supervision issues, we would talk about those kinds of things. How old is the child? How competent is the child to be by themselves? Do they know what to do in an emergency? So we ask a lot of probing questions when we talk about supervision, but there is no law that sets an age in Iowa under which kids can't be left alone.
Do you know if there are many phone calls that get made from other parents or other well-meaning citizens who are concerned about neglect? This is kind of a story that has been told quite a lot following the case in Maryland, because, of course, it was concerned citizens that called the police to come pick up the children who were walking home from a park. And I've seen a number of other conversations about, you know, people getting called if children were left in the car unsupervised while a parent ran in to buy a jug of milk, that kind of thing. Do you know if those kind of calls are happening very often in Iowa?
We do get calls, and actually, this is kind of an opportune interview time because they tend to be somewhat seasonal. And what I mean by that is, as kids now are getting out of school, we will get lots of calls from parents who are wondering, is my child old enough to stay on their own? Do I need to have a babysitter? Is there a law that sets an age under which my kids can't be alone? So we answer lots of those questions about this time of year.
What do you say when people ask you those questions? I mean, I know that you just told us there is no law, but do you refer them to anything to help them make their decisions?
Most Iowa communities have community resources, community services that can help parents either build their skills around these issues or understand the kinds of things that kids need to know in order to be more independent. So depending on the conversation, a lot of times we'll have the discussion we just had. How old is your child? How capable is your child? Where do you live? What kind of neighborhood do you live in? So we ask those probing questions, but there are also a lot of community resources out there to assist parents who have those questions. So we make referrals.
Well, and Kim, I want to bring you into the conversation because this is your area of expertise. First of all, in this whole free-range parenting debate, I'm curious about what your thoughts have been as you've followed along.
Sure. I guess when I hear the term free-range parenting, I think of trend. And with that, we have a lot of trends in parenting that come and go. And I think what's most important for parents to think about, whether it's this concept of free-range parenting or other types of things, is developmentally, where are kids at, emotionally, physically, socially? And I think when parents understand the development of their child, that can help them in their decision-making of what's the best thing to do in guiding that child. And children, development varies by kids, and typically, as far as kids being able to stay home alone after school or at other times, really has to do, are they emotionally ready to stay at home? And are even going, like in the Maryland case, walking home the mile or, you know, whatever that amount of time was, you know, are they emotionally okay walking by themselves? Would they know how to deal if a stranger came up to them? Would they know how to react, to how to respond? Or with that older sibling, if the younger sibling got hurt, let's say they fell and not just scraped a knee, but let's say there was a severe cut, would that older sibling know how to take care of that younger sibling or get help? And I think when parents understand what their kid developmentally is capable of, that can help them know as a parent what's their responsibility to make sure their kids are in safe environments.
Now, of course,
so those are the kinds of thoughts that go through my head when I hear these conversations.
Right. Well, and of course, every child is different. But looking at some of the developmental milestones that you follow, about when are most kids ready to have a little more independence, to spend more time on their own?
Sure. If we had to talk about average, and I like to say no kid is average because that's average is a statistic, but typically we think about age around 9 or 10.
Okay, so fourth or fifth grade for most kids.
Yeah, fourth or fifth grade. And for some kids, it's 11 or 12. When they're emotionally ready to be by themselves, but right around that fourth, fifth grade, sixth grade level, is when kids start showing signs of being ready, when they're not afraid to be by themselves, when they have the problem-solving skills that they can deal with situations. And then also, if you go much younger, I mean, what I always try to think about is if something happened in that house, or what I just described, if somebody came up to, like, let's say a second grader or a third grader, would they know how to respond to that person to keep themselves safe? Or if they're at home alone and let's say there was a fire, or let's say they were using a knife cutting a sandwich, you know, or whatever, and got hurt, would they have the reaction of being able to know what to do? And the other, so those are, I mean, once again, the age range I would say would be somewhere between 9 and 11 typically. And some kids might be ready a little bit earlier, but some kids need a little bit later. And I've seen very few 8-year-olds that I'd feel really confident that they would have the emotional capability as well as, you know, cognitive reasoning ability to stay by themselves.
Well, I think one of the questions that of course, a lot of parents ask when they're deciding, okay, you know, before and after school care, or do I let my kid get to school on their own or come home from school on their own? Of course, there's also the important question of can they get themselves to school on time, which is a big question as far as the responsibility of your child. But I've had this conversation with other parents, and they've said things like, well, you know, I think my kid could handle being home by themselves after school, but I also think that they would watch TV. And I would rather have them be at an after-school program where they're actually engaging with friends and doing other things. So, I mean, that's a big part of this question as well. Our goals for what our children will be doing with their time, right, Kim?
Correct. And I think as parents, I mean, there's been that age-old concept that continues to be out there of the TV as babysitter. Whether we're at home with our kids and that keeps them occupied, or when we're not and the kid wants to be home by themselves and we're shopping or at work or what have you, or as you mentioned, summer's coming up, and it's like, well, my kid will just watch TV and they'll be just fine. They won't get in trouble. But it's back to what kind of environment do you want to create for your child? Is watching TV, is that going to keep them is that going to nurture the development of your child the way you think is good? Will it give them not just intellectual stimulation? Will it give them physical activity stimulation? And like you said, socializing with friends. So as parents, we have responsibility for trying to create nurturing environments for our kids and helping to place them environments where they're not just safe, but it's a nurturing environment. And of course, we have limitations. We have limitations in resources and what's available to us. But I think it's important for us to be knowledgeable about what kind of environments we have opportunities to put our kids in, and then make choices not necessarily on convenience, even though many of us default to convenience, but in the long range, what's going to be best for our kids and not necessarily what's best for parents.
Well, I want to talk about safety with both of you because, you know, if your child is developmentally ready to be on their own or to go play at a park with a friend or something like that without adult supervision, I think a lot of us, and this is what we've been talking about so far this hour, do have a lot of fears about, you know, what kinds of dangers are really out there. And Wendy, maybe you can weigh in on that. What are the things we should be most concerned about?
You know, I actually think your previous interview was accurate with Barry Glasner in terms of the idea that child abductions are probably the thing we worry about the most. I think, though, to Kim's point, teaching kids how to problem solve, teaching them how to identify risks. So crossing traffic is a risk. Deciding to climb up on a retaining wall and walk across it rather than staying on the sidewalk is a risk. So when we talk about safety for kids, I think, again, neighborhoods are different, communities are different. So risks are different when it relates to how kids behave in their environment. And probably the strongest thing that parents can do is to teach their kids to be good problem solvers, to understand what a risk is, and then to understand the different choices they can make around that to ensure that they maintain their safety.
Let's talk a little bit about, I mean, as you said, I mean, the thing that we worry about most is child abduction, although it's the thing that is least likely to happen to our children. But still, we want to prepare our kids for a situation where a dangerous person might approach them or try to manipulate them. And for a long time, there was this whole idea of stranger danger, never talk to strangers. And that was what children were taught. That's what I was taught when I was a kid. Now we know a lot more about what the real dangers are. We know that as far as abduction or abuse, it's far more likely to happen from people that the children actually know. But do either one of you have an approach to preparing your kids to deal with those kinds of dangers that you really like? Wendy?
I would say probably the biggest competency is for kids to understand their own personal space, the idea that their body is their body. And so when anybody, whether it is a stranger or somebody who's known to them approaches them in a way that makes them uncomfortable, they should tell someone. Those are really the primary things that we try to teach kids very early on and continue to teach them as they grow. Part of that, again, is teaching kids about being independent and confident. And in order to get there, kids do need to have time to explore and make mistakes. That's where confidence comes from, is the ability to try to figure things out, to not quite get it right, and to go at it again. So a general idea of understanding that a person's space and body is their own, and that if somebody makes them feel uncomfortable with that, they should be talking about it, whether it's somebody that they know or somebody they don't know.
And Kim, I'm going to let you weigh in on that in just a moment. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about so-called free-range parenting this hour. We'd also love to hear from you, your thoughts, your concerns, what keeps you from letting your kids go out by themselves. 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the idea of so-called free-range parenting. How much freedom should our kids have? How much freedom can we give them? What are the benefits of giving your children freedom and helping them develop independence? What are the dangers? With me this hour, Kim Grader. She's Associate Professor and Family Life Extension and Outreach State Program Specialist at Iowa State University. She also contributes to the Science of Parenting blog. Wendy Rickman is here, Division Administrator of Adult Children and Family Services for the Iowa Department of Human Services. We also want to hear from you. What are your experiences with this? Have you pushed your children out of the nest and then wound up with some situations where you've had neighbors voicing their concerns? Are you afraid of what friends might think if you give your kids independence? Let us know what your thoughts are. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And before we get to some comments from some listeners, Kim, I want to give you an opportunity to respond. We were talking earlier about how to prepare your kids for dangerous situations. And I hearkened back to the stranger danger idea from when I was a kid. And now we know a lot more about what dangers actually do face our children. We know that abductions and abuse is far more likely to happen with people that we know and are familiar with. How do you prepare your kids? Is there a system that you like?
Yeah, what I like to think about is helping kids know, there's strangers or people that your family doesn't know well, and there's good strangers and there's bad strangers. And how do you help kids figure out who are the good strangers and who are the bad strangers? And I think one of the things that parents can do is they can help show their kids, if you're in trouble or if you feel unsafe or uncomfortable, who can you go to for help? That might be a stranger, someone that you don't know well. And many of those strangers that I would call are good strangers that we typically can trust is if we see a police officer, if we see a teacher, if we go into a restaurant, someone that works in a public place that can help a child. And strangers that we might consider may not be nice, strangers that are, let's say, unsafe strangers or we're not so sure about, would be people that are asking us to do things that we know that our parents wouldn't want us to do, or adults that come up to us and say, hey, I have a secret to share, let me tell you something, or let me give you a ride home from school. Those are people that are asking you to do things that that are not comfortable, that are not things that your parents would think were a good idea. And those are folks that are not strangers that we want to go with. And so I think by helping to point out who are some safe people that kids, in walking with your kids and showing them places to go, are really helpful. And I think when part of what I just shared was like recognizing these dangerous situations and then how do you react or respond if somebody does come up to you and say, hey, I can't find my dog. Could you come and help me? He went through these trees, to help a child understand that you don't know that person. So probably what's good is to run away or go find an adult, another adult that you can tell that might be able to help you. I think talking through possible scenarios with kids can be very helpful.
I've heard we've had a guest on the program before who talked about a theory of teaching your children about tricky people. If people seem like they're trying to trick you, that's something not to trust. You mentioned the word secret. She said that was one of those words that you should, you know, if an adult ever asks you to do something or say something or whatever, and they don't want you to tell your parents about it, that's a big red flag.
Definitely. Yeah. And as earlier it was mentioned, if an adult says something or asks you something that makes you feel uncomfortable in any way, then that's a sign to you as a child that this isn't a good person for me to be talking to. And I need to run away. I need to yell for help. I need to go find an adult that's one of those safe strangers. If I see a policeman, you know, or I need to run into the restaurant or a nearby gas station, those are safe places that typically we think of trying to, you know, public places to send kids.
We're talking about parenting today and giving our kids independence and freedom. There's been quite a lot of debate over the so-called free-range parenting approach, and you are welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Heather is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Heather.
Hi. I'm very passionate about this issue. I have a 6 and 7-year-old, and they are allowed to go anywhere in our neighborhood without me just standing over them, being a helicopter parent. I don't want to raise frightened, timid children, and I don't want them to think that everybody in the world is out to grab them and take advantage of them and exploit them. And I think that a lot of parents do. We have kids in our neighborhood who can't come up to my house because they're not allowed to walk 4 houses away. It's shameful that our society has come to be such cowards.
And Heather, can I ask you before you go, I know people who, when they give their kids freedom, allow them to be home alone, they don't want to talk about it very much with other parents because there is this sort of culture of judgment as well. Have you encountered other parents who feel like you're making mistakes?
Oh, absolutely. In my own neighborhood, some people are like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that she allows her 6 and 7-year-old to go in these areas. But I did the same thing when I was a child. I grew up to be a normal, confident person. I don't want my children to be cowards. And I feel like they are making their children timid and scared. And I don't care if they judge me. I'm going to have the stronger child.
Heather, thank you so much for your call. And obviously, Heather feels extremely strongly about this. Kim, the idea of other people watching you and watching how you interact with your child, and you know, there's this big culture online of all of these mommy blogs, people talking about their different parenting theories and approaches. Are we in an even more high tension, judgmental culture today than we have been in the past?
I think parents have always judged each other. I think what has perhaps heightened it is access to social media, because before you would see articles in, you know, published parenting magazines, you know, or in the newspaper, there might be letters to the editor, et cetera. Where now social media with all the blogs and all the websites, and everybody has opinions that they want to share of the right way to parent, or the best way to parent. And so I think it's just heightened awareness because of social media, but I think people have always, parenting is close to people's hearts. Many of us parent how we were parented. That shapes our parents, our parenting style, our past experiences shapes what we think is the best way to parent. And then when we read and we learn from other people, but also from research, then that also can help inform how we decide to guide our children and to parent them. But certainly I think it's been heightened because of social media. People have so much more access 24/7 to people's opinions and to information.
And we have this comment from Cheryl in Waterloo. She says, I think part of the problem with the helicopter parenting is the fact that we used to know our neighbors, so they knew who our children were. Nowadays, we don't know who our neighbors are, which makes us as parents less secure when our children are out. So, I mean, that's another cultural shift as well about how neighborhoods operate. Kim?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of neighborhoods when you pull into your driveway, you use your remote to lift up your garage door. And after you pull in, you pull your garage door down. And people just go in and out of their homes and don't spend a lot of time in their yards getting to know the people that even live next door to them. And years ago, we didn't have the remote that would allow us to go in and out of our garage doors, and some of us never had garage doors. So I think certainly the structure of neighborhoods, people have to be more purposeful in getting to know their neighbors. People are very, I mean, Iowa has one of the highest rates of parents who are employed. And so with that, as far as parents being at home during the day with their children and getting to know other parents, you have to be more purposeful in that than perhaps years ago. I guess the concept with the helicopter parenting, certainly I understood what was just, you know, said. I think also, once again, because of social media, because of cell phones, because of texting, because of all this, we have much more ready access for communication. So it's a lot easier for a parent to get a hold of their child in at universities. That's one of the big things the last 10 years at universities, and parents' constant communication with their kids who are trying to launch on to higher education, and mom or dad are checking in on them all day long to see how they're doing, to make sure they're emotionally okay, are they getting the paperwork filled out, et cetera. And so mom and dad really haven't left. The kids sort of at home still emotionally because they're getting texts all day from parents, where years ago there wasn't as easy access. The kid had to stop and really independently make some decisions because they couldn't quickly go to mom or dad for an answer. And so I'm not saying all that's bad. I'm just saying that has heightened, it's increased the frequency perhaps of communication because of cell phones and texting. But at the same point, it for some youth, it's sort of delayed some of their launching.
It can create a dependency. So there are definitely pros and cons because there are a lot of safety benefits to cell phones and devices like that as well.
Right. Oh, definitely. And I think with youth having cell phones, I mean, let's get off the college campus, but, you know, back to the younger kids, certainly that, you know, can be helpful because then if you need to call for help, you can. And if somebody gets hurt, et cetera. But I think earlier I mentioned about developmentally, how are kids emotionally, cognitively ready? So when you're 6 years old and you're a mile from home and you're playing in a park and there's no adults around that you know, if you fall and you get hurt, will you cognitively, mentally know what to do because you're six? And will you emotionally be okay to go ask somebody for help? And so I think development, parents may, they need to think through what is their kid really capable of in these different arenas of development. And kids vary. So not every 8-year-old's the same. Some 8-year-olds are a little more mature emotionally or cognitively than others. But in general, there's a lot of kids under 9 that emotionally are their reasoning ability to be left for long periods by themselves. And if nothing negative happens, it could just be because they're in an environment that physically nothing bad's going to happen. They're not going to get hurt. But they might also be a little scared.
Right. Let's go back to the phones. Suzanne is on the line in Grinnell. Hi, Suzanne.
Oh, hi, yes. I guess what served me the best in my life is my gut and being able to check in with how I'm feeling. And that's what I've tried to instill in my son, because it really also, like, I think her name was Becky, it really bothers me that we've lost the glue of saying hello to one another, and we're teaching this fear. And I think, so I have a 6-year-old, and I've tried to tell him, well, how are you feeling about this situation, and getting them to be able to check in with themselves and realize how they're feeling, I think is the best, well, it's not the best, but it's a very good way of keeping them safe.
Well, Suzanne, thank you so much for your comments. And I think it's interesting Suzanne's talking about trusting her gut. And Kim, I guess that's what people who are trying to give their kids more freedom and independence are also trying to help their kids be able to do, right? To trust their own guts.
Right. I mean, and I think there is, I mean, having kids trust their instincts, but also developmentally, we know that there's a certain ages that tend to go with certain developmental milestones that cognitive reasoning for a 5-year-old, 6-year-old is very different than a 10 or a 12-year-old for a typical development. And so trusting instincts is important, but I also think parents, it's important for them to know typically what kids are capable of.
I was following along on a conversation again on Facebook about free range parenting, and one of the people involved in the conversation was saying that they had just started allowing their 8-year-old to ride his bike to school by himself. The first time he did it, they were following along in the car just to make sure things went well. And the very first time, a neighbor that they did not know approached their child to make sure he was okay on his own. And Wendy, you know, we teach our kids. Lots of us still teach our kids not to talk to strangers, and people are approaching them and they are saying, hey, are you okay? And this may be somebody they've never heard of, they don't know. With people's concerns about children being on their own, do we need to also teach our kids how to deal with people who mean well, who are trying to assist them, even if they don't need assistance?
I think earlier when we talked a bit about good strangers, bad strangers, we don't want our kids to fear all people, but we talked earlier a bit about what kinds of things, if an adult asks you that makes you feel uncomfortable, then that's probably not a good stranger. You know, if that adult asks you to do something that you know that your parents would say is not okay, if they say, hey, I'll give you a ride, or, you know, here, come here, I want to show you something in my house. Would your parents be okay if you went into that adult's house that you don't know? I think those are the kinds of things that we want to help kids think about. But certainly we don't want kids to be afraid of any adult that they don't know, because then they do live in a society of fear, and that's not what we want to do. But we do know that there are adults that try to take advantage of young children because they know that they're they don't have all the skills because of their age, because they're young. So how do we? So it's important to teach our kids that if adults ask you certain things, then those aren't things that are good for you to do.
And Kim, do you hear a lot from parents asking questions about right now how much freedom they can give their kids or should give their kids?
Typically what happens around this time of year, I get a lot of calls or emails about summer's coming. And my kid's going to be home. At what age are they okay to be home alone? Because the parents are working. So they want to know, is it okay if their 7-year-old is by themselves in their house? Or if the 10-year-old, is it okay for them to take care of the 5-year-old? Because the parent doesn't have child care, you know, for the children. Those are the kinds of calls that I typically get. And so the kinds of response I give is helping them think through what is the children capable of doing without other adults in the household. You know, are they able to keep themselves safe? I mean, if they're using the microwave, if they're going to use a knife, I mean, what are the rules in the house? If a fire started,
right,
or if the younger child fell down the stairs and hurt themselves.
And we're out of time, but Kim, thank you so much for being here today. Kim Grader contributes to the Science of Parenting blog. And Wendy Rickman, thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
Wendy Rickman is Division Administrator of Adult, Children, and Family Services for the Iowa Department of Human Services. This is Talk of Iowa.